This is KYUK Public Radio for the Yukon-Kuskokwim Delta. I'm Christy Schallenberger. Alaska Governor Mike Dunleavy signed an emergency disaster declaration today to free up additional resources to help the state prepare for coronavirus. Dunleavy says it's inevitable the virus will be detected soon in Alaska and compared the situation to a slow-moving storm. There are no confirmed cases in Alaska. 60 tests have been done, with 46 negative and 14 still pending as of this afternoon. Dunleavy says the declaration allows the state to access federal money as it makes plans to fight the virus. The state is also now confident it can perform more than 1,000 tests, health officials say. Ann Zink, the state's chief medical officer, says the challenge now is to get hospitals and outpatient clinics set up to run tests. Zink also warns that people who are used to getting health care in Seattle should be checking with their providers because the health care system in the city is overloaded. And the Yukon-Kuskokwim Health Corporation in Bethel has suspended all future non-essential business travel that's out of Alaska for its employees in response to concerns over the coronavirus. That's according to YKHC spokesperson Mitchell Forbes, who says it's just a precaution to protect employees' health. He says the Native Health Corporation will continually evaluate its decision. Forbes says travel will still continue for providers and patients. YKHC is one of the region's biggest employers and serves 58 communities across the Yukon-Kuskokwim Delta. YKHC is keeping up with updates from the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention and meeting with Alaska state officials along with other hospitals in the state to share information and coordinate testing and care of patients that could be infected with the coronavirus. YKHC is also meeting internally every week to plan its response to the virus if it emerges at a village clinic or the regional hospital in Bethel, while also running drills. And in more coronavirus news, the Chamay Dance Festival in Bethel has been postponed to fall of this year out of concerns over the disease. The festival brings indigenous dance groups from all around the country to Bethel during March. Linda Curta is the coordinator for the festival. Curta and 17 volunteers met Tuesday night to decide whether to cancel Chamay altogether.
And from the very beginning, we took off the table canceling.
Instead, they decided to postpone the festival to the fall. The three-day festival was originally scheduled March 20th through the 22nd. Curta says they had just finalized the festival schedule. The decision came as Governor Mike Dunleavy issued a disaster declaration over coronavirus. People over 60 and those with underlying health conditions are more likely to become severely ill with the virus. Curta says the decision is an effort to protect elders who travel from the villages in the Yukon-Kuskokwim Delta and elsewhere to participate.
Elders would be severely impacted by this disease. So how can we do Chamay without the elders? We can't.
The dance festival usually happens at the Bethel Regional High School gym, where dancers, community members, and spectators are all crammed together. Elders sit in the front row. Sometimes people hop on the stage to yurok or dance with the group. All that can lead to a rapid spread of disease. People traveling for spring break this month are another concern.
Wherever folks are traveling, they're coming back to the Delta, and so the question is, would we know?
Curta says they still plan to hold the dance festival in the fall and are talking with the high school administrators about dates. And Curta says they plan to invite all the same groups back to Bethel. And moving on to public safety news, a bill that would substantially reform the state's Village Public Safety Officer program received public testimony Tuesday from various Native leaders across the state. As KOTZ's Wesley Early reports, testifiers were unanimous in their support of the bill.
While initially set up with a focus on wildlife management and search and rescue, the Village Public Safety Officer program has evolved over the last few decades as the primary form of law enforcement in rural villages. House Bill 287 was written with recommendations from a legislative working group to update the program to meet current rural public safety needs. The VPSO program is administered through 10 regional nonprofits throughout the state. Melanie Benke with Kowarik, a tribal consortium in the Bering Straits region, testified to the House Tribal Affairs Committee that current statutes limit how Native communities can keep their residents safe.
Flexibility, for example, to have rotating VPSOs in our region, the ability to direct resources for infrastructure has been hindered, housing, holding cells, the way the current statute is prohibits the state of Alaska from expending resources on those types of things.
Like all people who called in or testified in person, Benke was in support of the bill, which increases partnerships between the state public safety department and VPSOs, as well as updating statutes that are decades old. Joel Jackson, with the Organized Village of Cake, believes that high turnover rates and difficulties in hiring new officers are addressed in the new bill.
I think I saw the report. There's one out of three villages that still don't have any law enforcement, and that's very sad at this day and age. So I hope the committee and the working group can come to find something that will hopefully bring all police protection to all our villages and the urban areas, wherever you live. We all should have that.
VPSOs aren't the only form of law enforcement in rural villages, but there are concerns over the availability and reliability of alternatives. While state troopers have jurisdiction in villages, it can sometimes be days before a trooper responds to a call due to their spread out nature. Local village governments can hire village police officers, or VPOs, but felons and sexual offenders technically qualify for those positions, leading to controversy over their use. Support for HB 287 outside of testimony has not been universal. There are concerns from the Department of Public Safety and at least one grassroots organization that, under the new bill, convicted felons and those charged with domestic violence could also be hired as VPSOs. Lawmakers addressed some of those concerns in some amendments to the bill that required the Department of Public Safety grant a waiver to convicted felons, and they must wait 10 years after a conviction to qualify to be a VPSO. The same waiver is required for those convicted of domestic violence misdemeanors. Additionally, those with sexual crime convictions are ineligible. Ken Truitt, a staffer for Representative Chuck Kopp, helped put the bill together. He says that while those with criminal records could end up qualifying to be VPSOs, it's up to the discretion of tribal entities to hire them.
The statute doesn't say that an organization must hire somebody. It just says that they can consider somebody with these types of backgrounds.
Representative Kopp noted that many concerns over backgrounds are coming from communities with well-staffed public safety options.
It's very easy for us to sit home safely in our beds in a city and moralize about how public safety should be provided in communities where no trooper or city police officer would ever serve. And so I just wanted to put that on the record, that we need to recognize that some flexibility must be granted to improve public safety in rural Alaska.
After public testimony, HB 287 was moved out of the House Tribal Affairs Committee to the House Judiciary Committee. Reporting in Kotzebue, I'm Wesley Early.
And finally, six teams are making their way to the Cripple checkpoint on the Iditarod Trail. Cripple is the halfway mark in the race. The musher who arrives there first will get $3,000 in gold nuggets as a prize. And so far, Brent Sass is in the lead. As the mushers in this group try to get far ahead before taking their required 24-hour layovers, most of the front runners are already taking the required rests. Two are in Ophir, but most are doing it in Takatna. Pete Kaiser is among them. He says he's been having a rough time keeping his team focused. A couple of females went into heat, and the males were more interested in that than in eating and running. At Takatna, Kaiser observed that the dogs are eating better, and he's glad to see them refocus on racing and their job on the trail. Richie Deal started his 24 hours at around 11:30 last night in Takatna. He and Jesse Royer were the first to arrive there, just minutes apart. When they leave tonight will depend on their start order. Those teams who started the race in the front of the start order will have to wait a bit longer before hitting the trail again. Pete Kaiser will have to wait considerably longer. He arrived in Takatna almost 2 hours later than Royer and Deal. He started his 24 hours at 1:23 this morning. And some teams are taking their 24-hour rest back in McGrath. That includes musher Jessica Klaika. She arrived there a little before 9 this morning. This is KYUK News. Thanks for listening. I'm Christy Schallenberger. Send your tips and comments to news@kyuk.org and stay tuned for News Yukden coming up.